I had occasion this last week to spend some time visiting with a member from another congregation that I know this is going to be scary for you, sought me out for preaching advice. So I was able to study with him, and yes, there are those who actually would come to me for such things, and I know that's somewhat disconcerting for some of you, but nonetheless, one of the things that I emphasized to him was that as preachers and teachers, we always need to focus people's attention on what God has said rather than what we say. I'm going to endeavor to do that this morning, as always, although we're going to be dealing with a subject that will make it a little bit more difficult. I want to turn your attention to 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, and verse 33. While you're turning there, I will thank Brother Garrison for his words of encouragement, both to you and to me, to focus our attention this morning upon the Word of God. In 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, in verse 33, and actually Brother John McCauley brought this to my attention Wednesday night after class by asking me a question from this. Notice that the text says, "Do not be deceived, bad company corrupts good morals." His question was concerning that last part of the verse where it says, in quotation marks, "bad company corrupts good morals." If you have a Bible with references, usually when there is an Old Testament quotation, there will be a reference to that particular passage noted with a small little letter of some sort to show you what quotation or what passage is being quoted from the Old Testament. You will notice in this case, however, that although there are quotation marks indicating that it is a quote, there is no Old Testament passage or even other New Testament passage given in your or my text to indicate the source of this particular quote. He asked about that, and the reason that I gave, I still believe to be true after doing a little bit more thinking and looking into this. I think what is being quoted here is a proverb, but not from the book of Proverbs. It is a proverb or a common saying of men that is being quoted by Paul and used in this particular passage. That's not unheard of. In the book of Ezekiel, in the 18th chapter and verse 2, there's a proverb, and I referenced this, although I had it in a different place Wednesday night when talking to John. The passage I was thinking of was from Ezekiel 18 and verse 2, which says, "You will quote this. No doubt, you will quote this proverb: the children eat, the fathers eat sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge." That's not found any place else in Scripture either, other than other references to the same proverb. In other words, the source proverb is not the Word of God. So what we're seeing in these passages, in Jeremiah chapter 31, he uses it twice there, and then in Ezekiel, as well as one passage in Lamentations, that same proverb from Ezekiel 18 and verse 2 is utilized. It is a proverb of men, rather than a proverb or wise saying from God, as in the book of Proverbs. Now, all of that to get to this. The proverb that he is quoting here in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 is a commonly held belief, is a wise saying of men rather than of inspiration. Paul is citing it here, not giving it inspiration, but saying that it is true, and from that making a point. The larger point in this particular passage is that false teachers are bad company who by their evil communications corrupt the good morals of the brethren there in Corinth. If you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 12, there were some among them who were saying that there is no resurrection of the dead. That's false teaching, and Paul lays it out from verse 12 down to verse 32, how that it is false teaching. That's the bad company. That's the evil communication that he's talking about within this context of 1 Corinthians 15 in verse 12 down through the end of the chapter, really, to some degrees. Now, back on verse 33, it says bad company corrupts good morals. This passage is often cited to talk about the friends that our children have, their peers, and how that we as parents should supervise those things. I understand why. Proverbs the 13th chapter and verse 20 would be another good verse to look at, and probably more to the point. Paul is here quoting a proverb of men, and to some degree saying that it's true and basing his statement on it. But the larger picture is, he's using a proverb of men to teach them that they ought to have recognized that these false teachers were corrupting them by their association, that is, the Corinthians' association with those who would communicate such evil things. Confused yet? Be patient, I'll do better. Parents, what if your child had a best or closest friend who repeatedly demonstrated questionable general character and at times showed remarkably poor specific character and choices? Perhaps they'd even been in trouble with the law. What if your child had a best or closest friend that took advantage of their youthful innocence and naivete? What if your child had a best or closest friend that either directly lied to or often misled them? What if they had a best friend that encouraged them to keep secrets from you and proceeded to teach them how or educate them in ways to do so that they hadn't yet thought of? What if your child had a close or a best friend that undermined your authority as their parent and encouraged them to rebel against you? Perhaps even doing so under the guise of encouraging them to be their own person or to follow their hearts rather than just doing everything their parent told them. What if your child had a friend that got them into trouble at school or on other occasions when your child was away from you and from your supervision? That every time they went somewhere with this friend, they got into things that they shouldn't. What if they had a friend that flattered them regarding how special and mature they were? And how unfortunate it was that you, their parents, didn't really understand them or didn't really get them. What if your child had that kind of friend? Or perhaps they had a friend that used language to and with your child that was at least too old for them and at worst was suggestive or lewd or downright dirty in its nature. You came to know about this friend because your child all of a sudden has new words that have crept into their vocabulary that you didn't put there and would have never put there. What if your child has a friend like that? What if your child has a best or closest friend that encouraged them to not only view inappropriate pictures, and I'm trying to be very careful with language this morning, we've got little ears in the audience. What if your child had a friend that encouraged them to not only view inappropriate pictures, but encouraged them to take and share those same kind of pictures of themselves? How would you feel about that friend? Your child's contact with that friend. What if your child had a new or best or closest friend
that in general or specific ways encourage them to hang out with other kids that were completely unknown to you and out of your ability to reach or get to know. Now, if your child had that kind of a friend, how would you feel about that? How would you further feel about it if I told you that you not only introduced this new best friend to your child, but that you had encouraged the relationship and continue to not only allow it, but support it? You know where I'm going with this, don't you? That new best friend that you have introduced and continue to allow and support your child who does all of those things is nothing else than their cell phone and internet access to social media. Now you think back through that list of things that I consider kids. I know you're going to hate me after the day. That's okay. I'm here to educate, not to be loved and adored. Think back through that list of everything that I mentioned and how specifically those things relate to your child that has a cell phone with internet access to social media. Every single one of those attributes that I mentioned fit and are the destructive influences that we provide our children when we give them a cell phone with access to the internet and social media. We talk about 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. And stress to our children the importance of choosing and maintaining good friends with people of high character. And we talk to them about Proverbs 13 and verse 20. How that the wise walk among the wise, but that the companions of fools become foolish themselves. And then we hand them a device that provides them access to all of the things that we've told them we don't want them to associate with in another person. We're going to spend just a few minutes this morning talking about the positive benefits for your child having a cell phone with access to the internet and social media. I say we're going to spend a short time because I don't believe there are many. And even among these positives, I hope to show you how there are some caveats that must be adhered to, even for that to be a positive, but that how most often it's actually not a positive at all. First of all, having your child... Why do parents give their kids cell phones? First and foremost, we think security and for access to us, or our access to them, right? So they can call us when they need a ride. They can call us when they have problems. They can call us when they're in situations that they're uncomfortable with. And we can go get them. And we can call them. And we can text them. And they will never answer or reply to those texts. Let me tell you, if you're paying for the phone, and the first time that happens without very good reason, you take that phone back. You're paying for it. You're providing it. It is to give you access to them at any time and them to have access to you when they need you. But we think in these terms. It can be convenient. It can be a measure of security for you to maintain contact with them and vice versa. They can contact you when they need that ride, or you can check on them. But the first time they fail to respond or answer without good reason, revoke the privilege. It may be a good reason for your teenager to have a phone,
It is not a good reason for them to access the internet or the social media on that phone. Buy them a dumb phone, especially early on. What I mean by that is one that will call, one that will text, one that does not have internet access and therefore does not have access to social media. Is that my 2 cents worth? Absolutely. It may only be worth a penny and a half, but there it is. Secondly, cell phones and social media access can be used to study with friends. While this may be possible, it is not probable. This is much more likely to be a reason given by your child to get a phone rather than a reason for them to use a phone or how they will use that phone after they do. It is much more a cover for other types of interactions when they are studying with someone else. Very little study happens that way. From my experience of having children with phones in the past. Thirdly, it can enable them to interact with good kids that are not otherwise easily accessible to them. Kids from other congregations or kids that they knew from other parts of the state or even other states that they've met through church-related activities such as camps. They can maintain contact with them. And that's absolutely true. That is a good use of a phone that has social media access. It's legitimate and a good use of the phone unless you don't know the friend from camp yourself and you don't know the nature of the interactions that they're having with your child. Otherwise, how can you be sure that this is actually who this person is and whether or not they are actually worthy of the contact with your child, church camp notwithstanding? Not everybody that goes to church camp is good. Just because they're a member of another church doesn't mean that they need to have that kind of interactions with your child. So while this can be a good use of a cell phone with social media access, it does not ensure any of the above. Fourthly, as with social media in general, it can be a tool for your child to help or to influence others positively. I know this from my own children having phones in years past. It wasn't the smartphones at that time that were connected to the internet. But they were able to talk to other children at school that were having problems. And in some cases even bring those children to me so that I could do some counsel with them. It can be used that way. And in those kinds of ways, your child can use that cell phone to let their light shine in positive, helpful ways. But this is only true if your child is mature enough to be an influence for good rather than being influenced themselves for evil. And finally, on the positive side, as we've discussed in previous lessons, the internet can be a source of good and wholesome entertainment. You can find good things with which to be educated and with which to be entertained on the internet. But it can also be a very dark and dangerous place which gives your children unfiltered access to people and things that are either counterproductive to what you're trying to teach and train them to be, or to people and things that have designs on taking advantage or of influencing your children. Those kind of sites that I was trying so hard to not name earlier as being inappropriate are well known to register their site names as common misspellings of children's games and children's video sites.
In other words, they'll take a legitimate site where your child might go to see videos that are appropriate for their age, and they'll take a misspelling of that same site name and make it a site where there are all kinds of things they don't need to see or be exposed to, nor does any adult for that matter. That happens. So while it can be a source of good and wholesome entertainment, you have to be proactive in this. There are filters that are available and can be effective assets, but there are no substitutes for unfiltered parental access to those devices on a daily basis. If you don't have that and you've given your child a cell phone that has access to the internet and social media, you are asking for more trouble than you can possibly imagine. There is no reason, again, sorry kiddos, there is no reason for you to give your child a phone to which you do not have complete access and complete control. That means if you want those filters on there, you put them on there before you ever hand that phone to the child the first time. Because trust me, that child knows more about that phone than you do. I mean, who do you get to program yours? Come on, let's be honest. Now, that was the good part. You ready for the bad part? There's a few things I want you to think about in addition to what we've talked about thus far. Cell phones with internet and social media access also hamper the development of people skills like face-to-face communication. I mentioned this earlier. We're becoming practically illiterate, and cell phones are helping. With all the abbreviations and codes, some people now can't write a complete articulate sentence. With words spelled correctly that actually is grammatically correct enough for you to be able to figure out what they mean. One of the things that drives me nuts about social media is the people will go to all the trouble to put these pictures with words on them, memes I think they're called, to make some big, huge point and then misspell it or mispunctuate it to the point that they actually say something different than what they intended. Where are we getting to that? I told you before, if I was going to become a doctor, it would be an eye doctor or a thumb doctor. Because that's where we're spending our time. And cell phones encourage us to not develop those kind of face-to-face people skills that we're going to need in the real world. Back up to 1 Corinthians chapter 5 for just a moment. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and in verse 10, Paul has again been addressing a problem here in Corinth. That's what happens from 1 Corinthians chapter 5 pretty much on in the book. He's addressing either questions or problems. Actually, it's true the first three chapters as well in many ways. But in chapter 5, there was a man in the congregation there at Corinth who was caught up in sin. He had his father's wife. I'm not going to explain that further. I think you're adult enough to know what I'm talking about. He says in verse 9, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world or with covetous or swindlers or idolaters, for then you would have to go out of the world. Understand that this cell phone internet access encourages people to go out of the real world, to not live in the real world. Our teenagers have trouble getting and keeping jobs. Young adults into their 20s and even 30s have trouble getting and keeping jobs because they can't actually interact with other people because they've done it this way all of their lives with virtual communications.
They've retreated out of the real world in so many ways that they've lost the people skills that are necessary to read facial clues, to hear intonation in the voice, and utilize those to help interpret what somebody is actually saying. Cell phones and social media access encourage that further withdrawal into a virtual world that will eventually render them difficult to employ or difficult for them to maintain employment that doesn't involve some sort of reclusive use of a computer. Secondly, it puts them at risk to be misled by false and counterproductive information and thus to be taken advantage of. Children are children because they are immature, impulsive, unsuspecting, naive, malleable, unwise, undiscerning, and unable to see long-term benefits and short-term dangers and make intellectual rather than emotional decisions. And that's exactly how they should be because they are children. Given that that is true, whether you agree with it or not, given then that that is true, why do we allow them unfettered, unfiltered access to a very, not only adult world, but a very dark adult world? Look with me in Hebrews, the 5th chapter. In Hebrews 5, and beginning in verse 11, the Hebrew writer is condemning some of his brethren here among the Hebrew Christians by saying, concerning him, that is Melchizedek and Christ related to him, it is hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For by this time you ought to be teachers. You have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God and have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. I want you to notice that text and understand what's involved in having the senses trained to discern what is good and evil. Because immature children do not have that. Mature children, who are mature in their minds more so than in their years, do not have that. What does this passage say is necessary for being able to discern good and evil? Because we're wanting to keep our children safe. We're wanting to keep them on the right paths. So how do we know when they get there? He talks about time. He talks about maturity that only comes with time. And he talks about practice as being essential elements to be able to discern that which is good and that which is evil. Children, I again repeat, are children because they are immature. They are impulsively thinking with their hearts only in the short term rather than with their minds in the long term, because that's what children do. That's what we did as children. That's what every child does. That's what every child should do. Why? Because they're not adults. Don't force them into an adult world. Don't even allow them into that adult world when they're not equipped for it. They are unsuspecting. Go back with me to Matthew 18 for just a moment. I've read this passage for years, and it never really dawned on me until fairly recently what I think Jesus is actually saying here. In verse 1 of Matthew 18, he said, "Who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a child to himself and stood him in their midst, and he said to them, that is to his disciples, "I tell you, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven." And I've looked at that verse and thought, well, impetuous? Whining? Demanding?
short-sighted? In what way do we become like children? And then it finally dawned on me. Children are trusting, believing, and compliant or obedient. I think those are the kind of things that he's talking about. But because they are trusting and believing and compliant, we have to be very protective. And giving them unfettered and unfiltered access to the internet world has no good outcome. Don and I were watching a program the other day that was simply a slideshow presentation of historical photographs. And so they would have you know, comments on them. And it was fascinating to see some of these historical photographs. Most all of them were black and white. Some were not. But one that really caught our attention was actually an advertisement for toothache pain. It was cocaine. It said it eliminated toothache pain immediately. I said, well, I guess so. But now you've got a much bigger problem. Your tooth doesn't hurt anymore, but now you're addicted to cocaine. That's exactly what we're talking about here. We give our child a phone for them to be entertained or occupied or to meet some even legitimate need, and the cure that we give them is much worse than the disease. I've got an article I found just this last week and stuck in the front of my Bible here. I'm not going to read all of this to you because this is not inspired. That is. This article is entitled, "Giving Your Child a Smartphone is Like Giving Them Drugs, Says Top Addiction Expert." I'm going to read that again for you. "Giving your child a smartphone is like giving them drugs, says top addiction expert. Smartphone addiction is not some psychological hoax. It's real and almost as bad as drug addiction. Although it may not have any immediate health risk, excluding eye issues from excessive screen viewing, it is more difficult to get over because smartphones are not considered dangerous. Every drug addict out there knows they're harming their bodies and their minds. Not many would have these substances in their hands are on their tables 24 hours a day. Smartphones, on the other hand, never leave our sides, and because they serve a lot of purposes, I would interject useful purposes in our daily activities, the side effects are usually underrated, just like cocaine for toothache pain." The cure becomes worse than the disease. Cell phones with social media to access for our children encourages bad habits and even destructive, sinful behaviors. It's not just the abbreviated and encoded gibberish that they promote, but gossip. Do you know how much time educators spend in the public school system dealing with social problems that exist between students because of things that started on social media? Read your bulletin this morning. I included an article in there from a middle school principal that talks about how much of his day is spent dealing with that kind of things. And one of the problems that they face is parents texting their children while the child is in school and not supposed to be on their phones. We are the problem here, folks. We're giving them the phones and we're encouraging them to use them in ways that are counterproductive to what we say we're trying to accomplish in and for and through these children. These devices with their access contribute dramatically to gossip that runs rampant and often leads to violence. It encourages bragging and prideful arrogance. It encourages negative self-images and even those leading to suicide. Think about every teen or adolescent suicide that you know anything at all about. There were ties to social media and internet where these kinds of thoughts were not only placed but were encouraged by others. I'm fixing to use a bad word, little kids. There are stupidly destructive pranks and challenges that without the internet didn't have nearly the impact. You know the famous last words of many Southerners, don't you? Hey, y'all, watch this. That's kind of how it goes down south in many places. But kids don't come up with eating Tide Pods on their own. They don't come up with some of these other stupid challenges that are so destructive to their minds and their bodies without help. Or at least it wouldn't have such a widespread appeal without those kinds of interactions one with another. These challenges are ridiculous. Notice 1 Thessalonians for just a moment. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, pick up the reading in verse 21. Examine everything carefully, parents. Hold fast to that which is good, parents, for your children. Abstain from every form of wickedness. Again, parents for your children. No, Paul didn't say that when he wrote to the Thessalonians. I'm saying that. Because these things that Paul did write to the Thessalonians apply in all the same kinds of ways to our children. But finally, and perhaps most seriously, the thing that I think cell phones with internet and social media access does for our children that is most dangerous is that it robs them of their youth by allowing them into and even then further forcing them into a world for which they are simply not yet ready. Kids are playing with cell phones at ages when we used to be making mud pies. We may have tasted a mud pie, but there wasn't any challenge associated beyond just you and your buddy. The point is, it is allowing them unfiltered access to things that promote attributes, characteristics, and activities that are far beyond their ability to understand and associate psychologically, mentally, emotionally, all of those things. Let them be children. Let them be the kind of children that Jesus brought before his disciples and said, "This is the nature of heaven." Not jaded, not influenced by all these dark forces that are present within that world of internet and social media access. Let them enjoy the benefits of child's play and child's fun and child language and child emotions and child responsibilities rather than forcing them into that adult world with its dangers and responsibilities for which they're simply not yet prepared and cannot be prepared by exposure. Remember what we said from Hebrews 5? There is time that has to be involved. There is maturity which is associated with that time. And there is practice that has to be involved before they're ready for those kinds of things. Don't push them into that world. Don't allow them into that world. And don't encourage them to go there with your actions. Four quick conclusions and in the form of advice, and then I'm done, not only with this sermon, but with this subject. We've spent four lessons on this overall
between visual stimulation, audio-visual addiction, and social media pros and cons for adults, and now the pros and cons for children. I'm done with this subject for a while, okay? The elders have more they want to talk about than Monty's preaching tonight. Have at it. Four quick conclusions. If you must provide your children with a phone, give them a dumb one. Yeah. They don't need that other stuff. They can socially interact with people that you choose and that you control. You're their parent. You're not here to be their best friend or to be popular. You're here to guide them. You're here to not make them popular at school, but to get them popular with God. Not access into the right university, access into heaven. Be their parent. Give them a dumb phone. And I mean that by one that's not smart. One that only calls and texts, right? Preferably, maybe not even text. Two, check their phones and other electronic devices every single day. Let them know you're going to when you hand it to them the first time. I'm going to be looking at this every single day. I've put filters on here. I've put programs or applications on here, Brian can help you with this, that will help you to be able to see everyone with whom they talk and every site that they visit and every interaction that they have. You're the parent. Be the parent. Check their phones every single day. They are your children. They do not need privacy. They need parenting. Educate yourself regarding their devices and programs and applications. Make them accountable to you or take away the device. Simple. Put an end to it. If they must have a phone, teach them when and how to use it politely and for the right reasons. Never let it become an addiction that uses them. Always a tool that they use in limited and controlled circumstances. Be firm. Abuses equal denial of privilege. Number three, be proactive in these regards. Don't depend on the school or others to do your job as a parent. Spend time daily talking with rather than just to your children. Have phone-free times, phone-free places, and phone-free occasions. Vacations and trips? Put the phones away. This is family time. Create phone and internet-free experiences, outings, trips, vacations. And fourth and finally, and I want to leave you with this because I think it is that important. Understand that the most dangerous place your child will ever be is alone on the internet. The most dangerous place your child will ever be is alone on the internet. Now, we started off talking about bad company. And bad communication corrupts good morals. How more appropriate a passage could there be? We're talking about the spiritual well-being and the physical well-being of your children. Kids, I hope you can only thank me later when you have kids. I don't expect you to now. But know that I wouldn't be saying this if I didn't love you and care about you. I wouldn't be saying it to your parents. But it's that important. Are there reasons? Yeah, maybe. But there's a lot of dangers. Don't put your head in the sand. Don't be ignorant of these things. Be proactive. Take charge. You're supposed to be driving the bus, not riding on it without a steering wheel. Take charge. Grab the pedal, mash the gas when necessary, push the brake often. It's your job. I'm done. We can help you this morning to be right with God in some way. Now's your time. Come to the front while we stand and while we sit.